We've just heard a firsthand account of a case of gender inequality that might not seem like a big deal, but over the long haul makes the work experience for men and women very different, as influential feminist and gender studies commentator Amy Schumer has shown.
Hold up, girl, we spoke too soon. With this whole no makeup tune, kinda changed our mind on the makeup thing. You'll be the hottest girl in the nation, with just a touch of foundation. Girl, I can't be seen with the ghost from the rain.
Comedian Amy Schumer just won an Emmy for this parody music video about not wearing makeup. The pop culture interest in this gender inequality has been a long time coming, says Deborah Rohde, professor of law at Stanford University and author of The Beauty Bias, The Injustice of Appearance in Life and Law. Rohde says the legal profession has had considerable difficulty finding a consistent approach to this issue.
I was a chair of the American Bar Association's Commission on Women in Profession, and when we had a big annual lunch in a ballroom with 2,000 people attending, the organizers of the event took me aside in a very sort of constructive tone of voice, indicated that I really needed a professional makeup person for the event, which they would be happy to pay for.
Get out.
And that was the Commission on Women in the Profession, you know, devoted to achieving equality for women.
And this was a woman who made the suggestion?
Of course.
And what did you say to them?
I took it in the spirit in which it was offered and said, of course, I would be happy to pay for it. If I couldn't master mascara, that should be my expense, not the Bar Association's. But, you know, I couldn't help thinking, would they take the president of the American Bar Association, who was a man, aside and suggest he should improve his ties or have a little touch-up on his eyelashes? Not likely.
There's no particular reason why it should be women. There's nothing about women that make them uniquely suited to makeup for any reason, right?
Right, and I think it reflects the cultural preoccupation with women's appearance, which is more extreme than it is with men. Women suffer more social penalties for failure to conform to society's idealized standards. So you have a famous federal court case in which a woman bartender was fired for failure to follow the company's grooming code, which required her to have full makeup and teased hairstyle. And the men just had to have clean nails and a clean-shaven face.
Do you think it constitutes a tax of some kind in the sense that women have to make all these investments into makeup, whereas on an OSHA job for an industrial worker, the company will pay for steel-toed shoes for men?
You know, I do think that there's both a financial and time burden involved in makeup, but I think the real problem is our preoccupation with female appearance and our use of makeup and conformity to society's standards of height and weight as a proxy for occupational qualifications. So I'm more concerned with the social penalties than I am with the people who view it as a pleasurable extension of self.
So the kinds of penalties that concern you, aside from the one that you just spoke about in the case law of a woman who was penalized for her appearance, what things disturb you that maybe haven't made their way into court?
You know, all the grooming codes that require people to wear makeup are problematic. And I would wish for a world in which the choice was freer. I don't wear makeup, and my students don't much care whether I can master mascara or not. And that's liberating.
What complicity do you think the cosmetics industry has in creating this feeling that the person that we just spoke with talked about, this idea that it's about my feeling and I want to get that feeling back, so I'm going to spend whatever I need to spend to get that feeling back? Does that come from the industry itself, and does it have destructive consequences in the workplace that maybe have legal implications from time to time?
Well, I think the cosmetic industry has a huge financial stake in making women feel insecure about their appearance and in need of improvement. And so they invest an extraordinary amount in advertising campaigns to feed on women's insecurities. And that's not, on the whole, a good thing. Neither are fashion magazines that project images of female attractiveness that are airbrushed out of the realm of possibility for most women. So you have these very idealized standards and a huge volume of advertisements and advice columns for women suggesting all the ways that they should shape up and not just let themselves go, as my mother used to say.
Would it be better if after, you know, the acne goes away, that we were conditioned, in fact, to get rid of all this makeup? Is that something that you would prefer went away?
Oh, I'm reminded there was an exhibit in Seneca Falls, the birthplace of the American women's movement, that invited museum goers to write in what they thought the world would look like if men and women were truly equal. And one of the responses written in was, "Revlon will be no more." I think that, on the whole, would probably not be at the top of my list in terms of an ideal world. But I do think makeup is the first path down the road to cosmetic surgery and really significant and sometimes risky investments in appearance. And I'd like a world in which women of a certain age didn't feel that pressure to be made up or to have cosmetic procedures designed to make them look younger.
Deborah Rohde is a professor of law at Stanford and author of The Beauty Bias, The Injustice of Appearance in Life and Law. Thanks so much, Professor.
Thank you.